After all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Hey there, Wonderlings! Welcome to another episode of Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. I'm your host, Angela Bowen. Is everybody ready for the Memorial Day holiday weekend? Got any plans like traveling, camping, or grilling? As long as the weather's good, my husband Jeremy and I are going to hopefully grill steak on Memorial Day, or maybe on Saturday or Sunday. It just depends on the weather. All right, well, today I'm going to be reviewing Season 1, Episode 5, The Phone Call, which aired on April 12th, 1988, and Episode 6, Dance With Me, which aired on April 19th, 1988. Just a quick note, I will be turning this podcast into a weekly podcast with one episode a week. Yay! That means every week you're getting a new episode. So join me next week as I jump into Season 2 of The Wonder Years with the first episode, Season 2, Episode 1, The Heart of Darkness. Now, as I've said before, I am not doing every single episode. I will do the ones I like best, and then at the end of each season, I will host a listener poll to do an episode I haven't covered based on the most voted for episode. So that will be up on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, stuff like that. So you all can vote on a list of episodes that I chose not to do, and I will do one especially for you, whichever one gets the most votes. All right, how about some trivia for the phone call episode? We have one. The Apollo 8 launch that Kevin's class watched was on December 21st, 1968. And I believe it looks like they're watching it in like September, October on the show. All right, episode synopsis. Kevin tries to get up the courage to call Lisa Berlini, a girl he is crushing on. Paul tries to help by finding out if Lisa likes Kevin by consulting the junior high grapevine, which leads to a game of telephone with the entire 7th grade student body during lunch period and ending with unembarrassed Kevin faking sick the next day. Well, guys, let's jump right into this episode, shall we? The episode opens with Kevin Arnold sitting in front of a telephone, gathering the courage to call a girl in his class. Now, I'm going to tell you right up here, this scene comes up like 5 or 6 times throughout this 20-something minute episode. Alright, adult Kevin comes on to narrate, telling us there are few things in life that are purely terrifying as calling up a 12-year-old girl on the telephone, especially a cute girl. Kevin loses his nerve and hangs up the phone. He does that so much in this episode, I'm surprised that phone is not broken. Next, we're in the classroom as the kids are watching the Apollo 8 space shuttle launch. I would have loved to have seen something like that when I was in school. The only newsworthy stuff I saw was in 7th grade, we got to watch some of the O.J. Simpson trial in 1995 in my English class. And then when I was a sophomore in high school, I went in the morning to my science class and the teacher turned the TV on. And that's when we found out about the Columbine shooting in 1999, in April 1999, which was very horrific. So let's see, who else went to school in the 80s and 90s remembers the teacher rolling a TV on a cart into the classroom? I think there's even a meme of it on, online somewhere. I loved those school days. They were literally the best. Movie day? Heck yes. Adult Kevin tells us that he was still getting over his feelings for Winnie Cooper, and not really looking for love at the moment, but all that changes when he sets his sights on Lisa Berlini. Excuse me. Dang pop. I notice how Kevin was really ogling the legs of his nearby female classmates. Man, he must be really bored or very horny. You'd think that they see these space shuttle launches all the time, the way they're just sitting there like, oh, let's go already. I mean, I get that people are still double checking everything before they get ready to launch, but dang, be happy. I mean, it's not like you're really technically even having to learn anything. You're just watching something. Doesn't that beat homework? Or learning something? We don't really get to see these kinds of things anymore due to a lack of interest in the space program, I guess. The only time it seems we hear of the space program is when something bad happens, like an explosion. How do you think these kids would have reacted to seeing the Challenger being blown up? I mean, or just something in general. Do you think they would have reacted the same way as, you know, kids in the 80s probably did? He refers to Lisa Berlini as the kind of girl you dream about, but would probably never know your name. As the class counts down the final 6 seconds until the Apollo 8 blasts off, a pretty 12-year-old girl by the name of Lisa Berlini looks over in his direction and smiles. Kevin's whole face lights up as the song I'm a Believer by the Monkees plays. The bell rings right after the blast off. They timed that just right. What if they were still making adjustments and the launch was delayed by a few minutes? They'd have missed it to have to go to their next class. I noticed one girl in class who had her binder and books in a plastic bag. Well, I guess that's probably about as close to a book bag as they came in the 60s, huh? So the scene cuts back to the opening of the episode to Kevin in the kitchen, sitting by the phone with a glass of milk, chin in his hands, as he contemplates whether or not to gather the courage to call Lisa. I'm wondering how long that milk has been sitting there. It's probably room temperature by now. I remember the first phone call I ever made. It was to my husband, Jeremy. This was back when we were just on the cusp of starting to date. Back in 2003. I was so nervous. I mean, we talked at work and everything, but talking on the phone felt more personal. The first phone call lasted from 9 p.m. to literally almost 6 a.m. I'm not kidding. Neither of us wanted to hang up. Our second phone call lasted 6 hours. Kevin devises a plan to call to talk to Lisa, which he spends 3 days tracking her every movement, like a stalker. The day of, he runs outside her classroom door and waits as the room empties. He's just standing there with a smug smile on his face. I'm gonna play their first interaction together because it's so funny and cute and just speaks volumes of anyone who has ever stumbled over their words and been a nervous wreck over their crush. So here's the first clip. Kevin and Lisa Berlini meet cute.
Oh. Hi. How are you?
Fine.
Well, bye.
Fine?
I realized then that there were special
Fine.
Things that a man says to a woman.
Fine.
Now once again, we're back to Kevin agonizing over his decision to call Lisa. By the way, how did he get her number? I mean, I doubt she gave it to him willingly. Did he get it from the office, maybe? Now there's a montage of Kevin tossing and turning in bed over his dilemma and spelling out Lisa's name in P's as his family looks at him in confusion and concern at the dinner table. The poor boy was obsessed. He couldn't eat or sleep or even learn. He was that infatuated with this girl, Lisa. We see him in class drawing hearts with his name and Lisa's name and doodling. And the teacher's trying to get his attention, and he asks her to repeat the question, and she says, I asked you if you were present. And then she starts, like, still yakking and stuff, but you don't really hear what she's saying because the adult Kevin is narrating. I was like, well, lady, you're talking to him, so he clearly is, as you say, present. Damn, just move on already. I mean, especially if she's going in alphabetical order by last name. His name is Arnold. You got a buttload of other children to be calling on. And also, you're kind of delaying the start of class. All right, I love Winnie's pigtails. They are so cute. She's sitting right behind Kevin. I'm like, oh, the pigtails. Oh, so cute. We hear the Romeo and Juliet theme playing. I love this theme. Josh Groban on his third album, I believe, Awake, does a really good version of that song. Then we jump yet again to Kevin sitting with the phone, picking it up as if to call, then dialing a number, then slamming the phone down in frustration. This poor phone, I feel so sorry that it is having to go through all this misery. In the cafeteria, Kevin and Paul are holding their lunch trays as Kevin looks around. Paul begs Kevin to let them sit down to his legs cramping. And finally asks Kevin who he's looking for, and Kevin says, I'm not looking for anyone. He finally sees Lisa and sits down. Okay, so he was just looking for an ogling vantage point. What the hell is she wearing, though, this Lisa? A polyester purple shirt with multicolored flowers. Yuck, barf, gross. I don't care if it's the 60s, just now, I'll alert the fashion police. Seriously, icky. I would not wear it. I would wear something else. I would wear the striped shirts that the boys are always wearing, if it came to that, over what Lisa was wearing. Paul looks over at Kevin, who's undressing Lisa Berlini with his eyes, and asks him why he's staring at her. Kevin whirls around and slams his palm over Paul's mouth, asking him if he's crazy, and if he promises to be quiet, Kevin will release his hand from Paul's mouth. Are you crazy, Kevin? Maybe even a little paranoid? I understand he doesn't want to start the rumor mill up, but way to overreact. Paul asks Kevin if he likes her, and Kevin asks Paul if he's crazy. Like, are you crazy? But finally he admits, sort of. Paul asks if she likes him, and Kevin tells him he has no idea. Then Paul says, well, he knows how they can find out for sure. But Kevin immediately shuts that idea down, swearing Paul to swear to secrecy. Kevin's curiosity gets the best of him, and he turns to Paul and asks who would know. Paul tells him Patty Galvin, who lives next door to Lisa, and apparently she knows everything about this girl. Yeah, this is going to quickly turn into a major shitstorm. I can feel it now. They're preteens. Nothing stays between two people for long. Paul goes over to ask Patty, who it turns out has no idea, when Paul sits back down and breaks the news to Kevin. And then Patty gets up, goes over to someone else, and in turn they do the same thing, and so on, as Kevin watches all of this in mock horror. Now, it's turned into a game of telephone. I would really I would actually like to know what the actual message would turn out to be at the end. Because you know how telephone, you're all sitting next to each other, one person starts to whisper, and then when it gets to the end, the message is completely different from what it originally turned out to be. Some kid goes over to Lisa and tells her, who looks in Kevin's direction, but Kevin is long gone, having fled the cafeteria for the safety of the boys' bathroom, but not before knocking a tray of food out of an innocent bystander's hands, who was clearly caught in the crossfire. That poor boy. Now he's gonna have to go back in line, and hopefully he can get, I don't know, did they get free lunches back then? I'm not sure. I remember one time, well, actually a few instances, two in seventh grade. The first one was on a guy in my homeroom class who I liked and wrote him a note that I wanted to be his friend and put my number down. Yes, I know, stupid me. No, I picked a guy who I believe was under the radar. You know, he wasn't really popular, which, you know, I like those kind of guys, the ones that are under the radar. But unfortunately, it was passed around the class. The next time was also in seventh grade. I made a mistake of writing my crush's name on my notebook, then proceeded to lose the notebook in a classroom where I left it, forgot about it. And my class saw and teased the guy, a different guy, who I didn't think was popular, and I even tried to give him a note on the last day of 7th grade, but he wouldn't take it. Later, in 8th grade, we shared a science class together and were assigned to sit together. My dream come true, right? Only, I found out that he was kind of a dick, and that shattered my dream crush. Around the beginning of 8th grade, I had a crush on a new guy, and he was popular. He was on the wrestling team. I wrote him a note. I know, stupid, I will never ever learn. But we were standing in the hallway waiting for our first class to start, and my friend and I kind of looked over at him, and he read it out loud to all of his friends. But to make matters worse, my cousin was one of those friends, and he just looked at me in embarrassment, didn't even try to defend me or anything. I'm sure he was pretending he didn't know me. Now that it's morning, the next day Kevin decides to hide out at home by faking sick with a sore throat. That would not fly today. You would be going to school. The only thing that would probably work would be like an upset stomach, because how are your parents even going to really be able to prove that you're faking that? Nowadays, they would probably just take you to the doctor and then you would be found out. Many times in 5th grade and a couple times in 6th, I faked sick to go home and my aunt or grandpa had to come get me. Usually it was because I didn't want to have to deal with something like a project or some other, like, where you had to speak out loud or something in class after lunchtime. Norma checks Kevin's throat with a flashlight. That was usually the way to do it back then, even when I had a sore throat. But when I felt warm, like a possible fever, my aunt would check my temperature by pressing her lips to my forehead. I don't know, has anyone else's parents ever did that to them when they were young to see if they had a fever? Norma tells him to go back to bed, he's not going to school, and he feigns the, "Do I have to?" voice, which of course you do to make it seem real, and she tells him, "No arguments," and she'll bring him cocoa and the TV. Score! OMG. Yes! Kevin turns and has a big grin on his face. Faker! Oh, he's such a big faker! Kevin's lying in bed with his cocoa and TV tray, watching game shows. Then, many hours later, he's sipping soda out of a straw, feeling bored out of his mind. Kevin flips the channel from Let's Make a Deal to the news channel talking about the space shuttle program. It's dinner time now at the Arnold House, and everyone at the dinner table has their eyes glued to the television as footage from NASA is shown on Apollo 8. Kevin decides that tonight is the night. He will finally call Lisa at 8 o'clock. Bad idea, Kevin, because now you have a house full of people, which equals zero privacy, especially with the phone located in the kitchen. That has tons of foot traffic, especially, seriously, with Wayne there, you are not going to be able to make that phone call in peace. Maybe he should have called after she got home from school, but of course he had to chicken out just like all those other times. Norma runs a hand over Kevin's head and tells him he's looking pale, asking him how his throat is feeling. Kevin quickly rubs his throat and says, "Pretty bad. Pretty painful," mimicking a raspy voice. Norma thinks out loud that maybe she should check his throat when it's normal, just for a comparison. She looks up when she says this, like, is she trying to get Jack to confer with her or get his opinion? I mean, I'm sure he could really care less. Kevin changes the subject, asking Norma if she remembers the first time Jack called her up on the phone. That's good, you know, getting some outside input from other people, gaining, you know, knowledge from their experiences. She tells him she doesn't really remember. Then Jack pipes up saying he thinks it was Macy's. Then she remembers she was working at a tie counter there and Jack called to see if he could return a tie. Kevin asks if she knew Jack before that, and she tells him that she knew him because she sold him the tie originally. Then she recalls how she remembers holding up the tie to see if it matched his shirt, and then we see Jack's face light up. So in awe and love for his wife, such a sweet moment as their eyes meet. Very, very cute. They're both smiling. Kevin breaks a spell when he asks Norma, if Norma was hoping Jack would call her. She tells him, no, she wasn't hoping. She just sold him the tie. You know, I mean, in her eyes, he was probably just, you know, another customer. Just like, I was probably just another interview to my husband that day when I interviewed for that job at the video store. My dad said he didn't notice my mom till after he got out of high school. She was a grade below him, and one summer while she was working at a golf course, he and his buddy stopped by for a game of golf, and he jokingly told her she could wash his car. Surprisingly, she did. Jeremy and I met when I went in for an interview, like I said, at the video store. He was the one to interview me, being he was the assistant manager. I never looked at Jeremy thinking we would ever date, but the stars aligned and my friend had moved out of state and Jeremy and I were working together almost every night. We started talking and I liked how quiet he was. We pretty much started dating like a year after I started working there because my friend had moved away and I was on my own. I was lonely. You know, my one good friend moved out of the state. I didn't know what to do. In the end, he was the best thing to come from that job. We started dating a year later after I was hired, and then we got married 4 years later. Now here we are, soon to be celebrating our 10-year wedding anniversary this year. All right, not really the answer he's looking for. He goes back to his dinner. Now we see the clock on the wall read after 7:30 p.m. Kevin's sitting back in front of the phone, and he's goes to grab it, and as he does, you hear Jack yelling Norma's name as he's looking for his checkbook. Kevin opens a drawer and hands it to him. His dad goes over to the counter by the phone and starts writing the check out, and Kevin tells him he needs to use the phone. His dad's like, well, so use it. And Kevin tells him he was hoping for privacy, and Jack says, what do you need privacy for? So Kevin, using the only thing in his arsenal, tells Jack he's calling about a tie, hint, about returning a tie, hint, hint. It's about a girl. He doesn't say it's about a girl, but Jack just looks up at Kevin, and you think for just a moment that he might understand the obvious significance behind the statement. But then he just asks Kevin, when did you start wearing ties? The point apparently lost on Jack. He tells Kevin not to touch his pens and walks out of the kitchen. Why the hell would Kevin be wanting to touch his pens? I don't get it. Maybe they break all the time. Or they get lost. I don't know. Now we see the clock and it's 10 to 8 p.m. Kevin practices what he's going to say out loud. Just being normal. Then he deepens his voice, which makes no sense. He picks up the phone and dials. It rings and he says, hi, this is Kevin. And you think it's Lisa on the other end, but it turns out it's Paul. And he asks him how school was. Math and if anything happened in gym. Paul says nothing happened. Kevin gets frustrated and tells Paul his life is so boring, it's really depressing, and slams the phone down. Well, fuck you too, Kevin. Damn, what did he think was gonna happen while he wasn't there? A fire drill? An explosion? Something fun maybe, like an assembly with an awesome yo-yo show, like on The Simpsons? We see the clock again, counting down the minutes till 8, and then we see Kevin trying once again. But the phone rings. It turns out it's Wayne's friend Jeff, and Wayne comes in. Kevin tells him to keep it short, and Wayne just pushes Kevin back down into his chair and tells him he'll be off when he's off, and calls him Scroat, which is his pet name for Kevin. Then he sits down, telling Kevin that this is a very important phone call, and talks for what seems like hours. He asks Jeff if he saw the way he nailed Jimmy on the bus. So he what? Threw something at him? Kevin gets up, asks Wayne if his phone call could wait, and Wayne shoves him back into his chair with his foot. Wayne calls the kid a real weeder. What the hell is a weeder? I thought maybe he meant wiener. Then he says they should tie him up. What the fuck is he planning to do? Tie this kid to a tree after forcibly removing his clothes? Finally, Wayne is off the phone, but he decides to hang around the kitchen and bug Kevin. He asks who he's trying to call, and Kevin tells him no one, to which Wayne retorts, pretty late to be calling no one. So he starts throwing out names and then proceeds to guess. Finally, he grabs the paper from Kevin's hand and dials the number himself. Kevin tries to throw Wayne off, saying that the number isn't real. But when it starts to ring, Kevin goes to grab the phone out of Wayne's hand, and they get into a scuffle so loud that Jack comes in, telling them to knock it off, and for Wayne to leave Kevin alone. As Wayne leaves, he takes his palm and pushes Kevin's face, like, shoving his head practically into the wall. He is such a dick. Kevin's mind goes into fantasy land as he imagines how his phone call with Lisa is going to go. Then we see the inside of her bedroom as she's sitting on her bed with her friend. Her friend whispers in her ear, telling her who Kevin is, and then she stands up as the camera pans outward. We see the room is packed with students and teachers and a couple news reporters, and they are all laughing. Kevin's courage is shaken after this, and he turns to look at the clock, realizing he's missed his chance. Norma calls to him from the living room, telling him he should be watching Apollo 8 on the TV, and Kevin wanders in, and we see a shot of Earth from inside the space shuttle. Kevin decides to try to call one last time, and I'm going to play that clip now because it shows just how natural the conversation is, and Kevin isn't all that nervous anymore. So I will play the clip, the phone call, and I'll be right back.
I just had to pick up the phone and call her.
Lisa? Hi, this is Kevin.
From homeroom?
Yeah. Right, the little guy. Oh. I had a sore throat. Nah, it's not too bad. I'll probably come back to school tomorrow. Miss Rito? Yeah, she's so weird.
Kevin, excuse me, guys. That's basically the end of the episode. Now, time for my flower power rating. I'm giving this episode 3 out of 5 flower power petals. Number one, for when Norma and Jack are reminiscing how they met, I love how their eyes kind of meet across the table and they smile at each other. I think that is so sweet. Number two, Kevin's awkward first conversation with Lisa Berlini in the hallway. And number three, when Kevin finally gets a nerve at the end of the episode to call Lisa, which you heard in the clip. I knocked off 2 for that constant shot of Kevin in front of the phone and that dang clock. They showed it practically what felt like 10 times this episode. That was like, felt like a lot of filler. Who was the worst? Well, you know what? I hate to do this, but I am giving it to Kevin. He treated Paul terribly, practically suffocating him in the cafeteria with his hand over his mouth because he asked if he liked Lisa Berlini. And knocking the tray out of a kid's hands after running out and, of course, hanging up on Paul, calling his life boring, and he's very depressing. For the Far Out Threads Award, it is going to go to Winnie and her pigtails. Such a cutie. All right. How about some Wonder Years goofs for the phone call episode? Anachronisms. The television announcers state that the President Kennedy promised to send a man to the moon back in 1960. However, he wasn't inaugurated until 1961, and he gave that speech on May 25th, 1961. Continuity. In this episode, Kevin watches as the astronauts aboard Apollo 8 film the Earth while orbiting the moon. However, the Earth was shown in full color. The Arnolds actually do not have a color TV, as revealed in episode 9 of season 2, where Wayne and Kevin attempt to persuade their father to buy them a color TV, so the Earth should actually be shown in black and white. Kevin feigns illness and stays home from school, noting that Apollo 8 enters its orbit around the moon later that night. They did that on Christmas Eve, 1968. Not only would Kevin have been on Christmas vacation, his house also should have been decorated for the holidays. The Apollo 8 launch that Kevin's class watched was on December 21st, 1968. Kevin's narrator says Tuesday the 8th, the next Tuesday the 8th would have been April 1969. All right, guys, let's move on to the next episode, Dance With Me, which aired on April 19th, 1984. Kevin asks Lisa Berlini to go to the dance with him. She agrees to go with Kevin, but when Brad Gaines asks her to go, Lisa decides to go with him instead of Kevin. While sitting with Winnie and Paul during lunch, Kevin feels himself falling back in love with Winnie. Kevin asks Winnie to go to the dance, but she's already going with Kirk McRae. Kevin tries to make Winnie jealous by asking a random girl to dance with him right in front of Winnie. This episode opens up once again. We're in homeroom where Kevin and Lisa Berlini are making eyes, smiling at each other as Mr. DiPerna is going on about the dress code for over the intercom. Kevin feels connection to Lisa due to their almost 4-minute conversation on the phone. I wonder if in all of those almost 4 minutes, did Kevin bring up the Apollo 8 that he'd seen on TV with a view of the Earth from the space shot? From space? Blech. They're both making fun of DiPerna's boring-ass speech, and then he has the nerve to go straight from the handbook or revised dress code plan. I mean, if it's available outside the office, which he says, then they can just go there to find out. Jeez, guy, let these kids have their homeroom time. But then at the end, he mentions RFK's first fall dance this Friday. All right, now we're in the hall. Paul asks Kevin if he's going to ask Lisa Berlini to go with him. Kevin tells him, I don't know, maybe. No hesitation there. Apparently, he's got it in the bag. Paul whines about who will he go with. Fuck, I don't know, Paul, go stag. Kevin did not say that. I said that as if I was him. Kevin suggests Carla Healy and Paul doubles over in a sneezing fit. Paul tells him, no, it's out of the question. Kevin asks, why not? I hear she likes you. So the name Carla Healy has the same effect on Paul as seafood and grass pollen. Really? So this is like a anxiety allergy. Interesting. Winnie comes up to the guys and asks what's wrong with Paul, and Kevin tells her the C word, Carla Healy, she guesses, and asks Paul if that's who he's going with, and Paul just shakes his head and starts clawing at his face like he wants to rip his skin off. Winnie turns to Kevin, so you're taking Carla? And Paul says, no, he's taking Lisa Berlini. Winnie looks surprised. Lisa Berlini, huh? Kevin says, maybe, he's not sure. Maybe not. Winnie tells him to go for it. She's nice. She's okay, Kevin shrugs. More like, she's not you. Winnie excuses herself and walks away, so we clearly know she's already going with someone, otherwise she would have made herself more available to be asked. Or maybe she felt awkward thinking Kevin was going to ask her and quickly got out of there. So now we see Kevin in yet another class together with Lisa. Damn, do they have like every fucking class together or what? I think it's science class. They're watching a film strip on whales. Kevin and Lisa start to pass the notes back and forth as the song The Letter by the Box Tops plays overhead. I just learned this is social studies class. Huh? I thought it was science class. I mean, whales. Actually, Kevin just said they're watching a slide on pollution. Okay, this still sounds like a science class to me. I was in social studies in 8th grade, and it was more of a history class. Well, whatever. Kevin and Lisa start passing notes to each other. Each response, they rip off a new scrap of paper. How is the teacher not hearing the ripping? It is so loud. Their desks are literally right next to each other. They could be writing on a sheet of paper and passing it back and forth. It would make less noise. That's how my friend did and I did that in high school. I remember Barbara and I did that in 10th grade. I would write on a page in my notebook and would pass it to her and vice versa. I think we were sitting at the same desk, to be honest. Mainly they're writing how boring the class is and they don't hope that they won't have homework. Finally, he writes if she's going to the dance on Friday, and she sends back, maybe. And then Kevin has his own personal pencil sharpener. Wait, they had those back then? I always had to go up to the front of the room to sharpen my pencil. He writes back if she wants to go with him to the dance. Just write in print. Why does he have to use cursive? I learned that in 4th grade and was told by my teacher when I became an adult, I'd be writing in cursive all the time. Well, guess what? I don't. I only use cursive when I have to sign my name as for a signature. She writes back okay with a smiley face and the O. With that, the lights come up and they walk out of class. Just outside the classroom, a blonde-haired boy named Brad stops Lisa and asks her if she wants to go to the dance, and she accepts. What a two-timing hoe. Sorry for the language, but what the fuck? I mean, yeah, Brad is played by Park Mall. Bleh. I cannot talk today. Bleh. Mark Paul Gosselaar of Saved by the Bell fame. But still, you made a commitment. That scrap of paper is a binding contract. Alright, well, I'm going to the clip entitled Kevin Gets Friend Zoned.
Hi, Lisa. Want to go to the dance with me on Friday?
Okay.
Great. I'll see you.
I had it in writing. Maybe there was some legal action I could take.
Lisa? Oh, Kevin.
Yeah. Did you just say you'd go to the dance with Brad?
I'd seen that look before. In 1964, when my mother put our Cocker Spaniel to sleep.
Well, yeah.
But you just said you'd go with me.
That was before Brad asked me.
So?
So, I didn't know he was gonna ask me when I said yes to you.
So?
Well, I mean, you're not gonna be weird about this or anything, are you? I mean, I really like you, Kevin.
And that's when she said it. The word I was to hear from beautiful girls like Lisa Berlini time and time again. The word that struck a chord so violent in me that I wanted to strangle guys like Brad Gaines with my bare hands.
Friend.
Now they're in the cafeteria and Paul is all smiles as he tells Kevin too bad about that Lisa Berlini thing. Oh, Paul, can't you be somewhat sympathetic? I mean, he's literally got a big freaking grin on his face. Too bad about that Lisa Berlini thing, huh? I mean, so, what? Paul, come on. Okay, Winnie asks Kevin if he's going to eat his hamburger, and he tells her he's not hungry. Why the hell did you take it then? What a wasteful butt. Then, to make it worse, Paul starts in on the hamburgers, how they're made, and gross stuff, like, it's put inside by the cafeteria ladies. One time, a kid found a fly under his bun, and when he lifted it up, it flew away. Paul, you sound like that guy I went to high school with named Daryl, who talked about peppers and scabs and boils, and then he'd get this creepy look on his face, and his voice would deepen. Yikes. I'm still trying to prove to my coworker that this guy exists, even though I can't remember his last name and I cannot find his picture in my high school yearbook. He apparently still thinks that it's just a imaginary friend or something. When he calls Paul out on his bullshit story and how she doesn't believe it, and Paul says, and I quote, "It's documented fact." Kevin is so pissed, he slams his fist on the table. What the hell, Kevin, is your problem? He needs to seriously talk to someone about his anger issues. He flies off the handle way too much for a kid his age to do. He must get that from Jack. Kevin now continues the debate over the fly and the hamburger, saying how a bug wouldn't be able to breathe and would probably have suffocated under the bun, and Winnie adds how flies are too fast to be caught. Winnie decides to read the new lunch menu as Kevin becomes mesmerized by her mouth as she reads off the different foods for each day. I wish my school did that so we could take them home instead of it being posted outside the cafeteria. I loved Chicken Nugget Day the most and got gravy on my nuggets as well as my mashed potatoes. Chicken Nugget Day was always like Wednesday and then I think it moved to Thursday. Pizza Day was so gross. Soggy pizza crust, dry tomato paste, and waxy cheese with dried out pepperonis on top. Yuck. I remember one time in 8th grade, the one and only time they had strawberry shortcake for dessert. And I ended up having to get a shot in the butt along with other students after we got bussed up to the high school because we were all in junior high. And the strawberries possibly contained hepatitis B or C. Rumor was the pickers of the strawberries were mad they got fired and pissed on the strawberries. But again, it might have been a rumor, but I mean, I heard it from my friend's mom when we were all sitting around talking about it one day when I was over at her house. Kevin and Paul are back at their lockers, and they see Winnie with her new flame, Kirk McRae. Paul's practically drooling over him himself as he lists Kirk's attributes. He's an 8th grader, captain of the football team, and Mr. Popularity. The 8th grade has a football team? I always thought that was more of a high school thing. Oh my gosh, I just saw the guy who plays Kirk McRae on his IMDb page. The actor is Michael Landes. He played Riley Roberts on the Torkelsons TV show, which I watched when I was in high school when it was on the Disney Channel. He was also the cop on Final Destination 2. Fed up, Kevin tells Paul there's more to life than being cool, athletic, and popular. Yeah, that's true, but at least it gives you an in, right? Playing football in school's got to rank high on the popularity list, I would believe. Paul says, I guess it's just you and me going to the dance then, huh? Patting Kevin on the shoulder. Kevin turns to him and says, no, I'm not going. Then Paul turns into a giant crybaby and states that he can't go if Kevin doesn't. Why? Does he need a wingman or something? Paul, listen, you are capable of doing things without Kevin, such as going to a dance. He should know other people at his school. If not, he needs to loosen the apron strings and develop some interests. I'm sorry, you all know I love Paul. He is a great best friend, but you gotta admit, he is kinda clingy. Get your girl, Paul. Go get Carla. Just ask her. He's still on about it as they walk into Kevin's room and Kevin crashes face first onto his bed. OMG. So they continued it on the ride home from school, on the walk to the house, and into the house and into his room. Okay, seriously, you gotta let it go, buddy. Kevin tells Paul to just go alone, and if he can't, he should just ask Carla Healy. Paul tells him he will and storms out of the room, and outside the door we hear him sneeze. Kevin's watching I Dream of Jeannie at the kitchen table, and Norma comes in with the plates and silverware and tells Kevin to set the table now. Not an hour, not after I Dream of Jeannie, now, as she sets down the place settings. She walks over and turns the TV off. As Kevin starts setting the table, Norma asks if he's okay. When he tells her, yeah, and she then comes over to him and asks if something happened at school. She's got mom ESP there. I mean, he didn't look like there's anything really going on. I mean, he was, sorry, that was my timer. He didn't really look like there's too much. I mean, he was quiet and everything. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's always a talkative guy. So, but it's mom ESP, mother's intuition, right? She knows when her son's having a bad day and he doesn't want to talk about it. And Kevin brings up how he thinks Winnie's mom is not a good mom because she's letting Winnie go to the dance with the 8th grader and he's a real jerk and doesn't think Mrs. Cooper should let Winnie go with him. No, he's not, Kevin. Kirk McRae is a sweetheart of a guy. I bet he noticed Winnie on the first day of school because he was at the bus stop with them. Norma asks him if there's something she should know, like if this Kirk McRae is on drugs. Wow, I love how she goes straight to the point. Is he on drugs? Kevin tells her no and how Winnie's young, like, you know, impressionable. Norma agrees that, yes, she is young. But they really don't have a say in who she goes with, and has anyone else asked her? Kevin says he's not going to the dance, and Norma tells him that, you know, you don't have to spend the whole night dancing with the person you came with, and the thing about dances is anything can happen. I went to my 8th grade end of the year dance, and I danced with some guy. I just went up to him. I was nervous, you know, I thought he'd tell me no. You know, I said, do you want to dance? And we danced. I can't even remember the song, but I mean, I didn't talk to him or anything after that. I barely knew him. And then, of course, I danced with my friend David Church, and who I had known since, like, kindergarten or first grade. What a great mom she is. She always gives great advice when it's most needed. Kevin, still unsure about going, decides to throw caution to the wind, especially after Norma tells him they're expecting company on Friday night. And if he doesn't go, he can be her special helper. Next, we see a montage of Kevin standing in front of his bedroom mirror, trying on different clothes. The first one is a sweater vest, shirt, and tie. Next, he's got this blue and white checked John Travolta Saturday Night Fever satin shirt with a gold chain. And then we see him with a black leather jacket, white, and a white tee, sporting black sunglasses with his hair gelled back while he's practicing his pickup lines. I bet Fred Savage had so much fun filming this. Next, we see a record player as a montage of his family performing different dancing techniques in front of Kevin and Paul to an array of songs playing overhead. First, we see Karen moving her body around, all free and yoga-like, telling them to just let it all hang out and get in touch with your body. As Magic Carpet Ride by Steppenwolf, why do I keep saying Stefan? Steppenwolf plays in the background. This is definitely having an effect on Paul, who has just got a big old grin on his face. Norma and Jack are up next as the dance to some kind of dance. I'm not sure what it really is, like the mamba, the waltz, something or other. Probably something from the 40s or 50s, maybe. Then Wayne shows off his weird duck walk skills and other crazy moves. Kevin and Paul critique everyone's dancing as they look on. Kevin's back in his room dancing in front of his mirror to the song Born to Be Wild. He looks like he's having a blast. Now the time has come and we're at the dance as Born to Be Wild also plays, seems to be playing at the dance as well. I see Coach Cutlip is chaperoning this dance, and he blows his whistle, probably at some kids that are dancing too close together. Kevin and Paul enter, and this is the first time we see Paul without his glasses. Is that a safety hazard? I mean, how well can he see? He asks Kevin if he thinks he should have just worn his glasses, and Kevin tells him he looks like a million bucks, and asks Paul how he looks. And Paul has no idea because, of course, he's blind. So, is Paul the Milhouse to Kevin's Bart Simpson, or more like the Seth Cohen to Kevin's Ryan Atwood from the OC? Paul looks around and says, "Hey, there's Winnie!" And Kevin asks, "Where?" "Over by the punch bowl," he points. Kevin looks, but it's only Coach Cutlip. Dang, Paul's vision is for shit if he thinks Mr. Cutlip is Winnie. I mean, the guy is over 6 feet tall, for crying out loud. Maybe Paul should have kept his glasses on. Kevin and Paul hang out by the punch bowl and take turns in shooting crumpled paper cups into a nearby trash can. One of Paul's hits Carla Healy, who takes that as an invitation that he wants to dance. Carla is a pretty girl with blonde hair and cat's eye glasses. So adorable. She kind of reminds me of a female Paul. What the hell? I'm sorry. I stumble over my words. Paul looks over at Carla and starts sneezing repeatedly. So she walks over to him and Kevin takes charge, placing Carla's hand in Paul's. And all I can think of is Paul's hand has to be covered in snot from all that sneezing. That is, icky gross. They head out onto the dance floor and Carla really gets into the music as Paul just kind of stands there at first, unsure of himself. But eventually he starts really getting into it, having fun. He's doing like the fish, the swimmer, some kind of popular dance. I'm sure it's got a name. I'm sure I've seen it. Kevin looks miserably on from a spot on the bleachers as he spots Lisa Berlini and her date, as well as a couple teachers having a great time dancing too. Kevin notices Winnie walk in and comments on how pretty she looks, and then Kirk McRae walks in after her. Fed up, Kevin storms out onto the dance floor, and as he walks across the gym, he shoves some kid. What the fuck, Kevin? I had to break it to you, but right now, she's not your Winnie. You don't have claim over her like a piece of property. Kevin asks the girl standing next to Winnie to dance just to make her furiously jealous as he is. Side note, she's not. She's not playing a game. She's not jealous. She's just having a great time with a sweet guy. Kevin is being an unbelievable asshat. Tears of a Clown is playing by Stevie Wonder and the Miracles, and then it switches to a slow song, Cherish, by The Association. Kevin asks the same girl if she wants to keep dancing, but keeps his eyes focused on Winnie the whole time. Kevin gives up and heads out of the gym to sit on the curb as he fantasizes about I Dream of Jeannie, and the screen turns black and white like the show. And Winnie's dressed up in Jeannie's costume. Kevin looks at her confused and then actually converses with the hallucination. The scene pops as Kevin is stuck back in reality. Winnie comes out and sees Kevin sitting by himself and asks him what he's doing. He says nothing. Then he asks her to dance, and then we see them on the dance floor slow dancing to Otis Redding's I've Been Loving You. I love this song. In fact, it's the best song out of all the songs that have been played this up to me. All right, well, that's the end of the episode. Time for the Flower Power Petal rating. I give this episode 4 out of 5 Flower Power Petals. 1 for Kevin's outfits, his changing montage and impressions in the mirror. 2 for the family showing Kevin and Paul different dancing techniques. 3 Paul in a sneezing fit over the name Carla Healy. And 4 Kevin and Winnie's slow dance at the end to I've Been Loving You by Otis Redding. So sweet. I had to knock off a pedal for Kevin shoving that kid as he walked past him on the dance floor. That was a dick move, Kev. Alright, Far Out Threads Award goes to Kevin and the outfit change montage in the mirror, especially his Danny Zuko greaser outfit. Alright, to stay connected to the podcast, you can visit the Facebook page at Looking Back on My Wonder Years on Wonder Years Podcast, Instagram at LBOM Wonder Years Podcast, or Twitter at Wonder Years Pod. I do trivia and listener questions, so if you would like a shout-out on the podcast, all you got to do is answer them. Also, if you want to share your Wonder Years favorite moments of Season 1, just email me or follow me on any of my social media platforms, and I will share them on the podcast. Join me next week as we see Kevin and Paul take a walk on the wild side when they meet bad boy Gary in detention in Season 2, Episode 1's Heart of Darkness. All right, well, until next time, peace out, Wonderlings, and I hope you all have a very wonderful Memorial Day holiday weekend. All right, bye-bye.